art. Basically, the immanentizing of the eschaton. It is taking our eschatological goal and trying to make it imminent to history, or imminent to the time of our lives. We find St. Paul in some of his letters in the New Testament talking against this kind of thing. You've already risen from the dead, you say. You're already there. Would that you were. But you're not. Any wholeness that is experienced, including the wholeness that can come through a dramatic religious conversion, is a relative state of integration. It is not salvation. It will be gone beyond. It will be broken down for the sake of a more embracing wholeness that comes through meeting further questions and further challenges as one's life develops. So the self, then, and I'll spell this one out a little bit further on today, but the self, which for me is a triple compound of bodily organism, sensitive psyche, and spirit or intentionality. I'll go into that more in detail in a few moments, what I mean by each of those words. But the total self, that triple compound, is both an integrator of my development up to this point, and an operator of further development. So the self integrates development up to this point, but also operates further development. Moves me beyond the development that I've come to up to this point. The self does both of these things, the total self, the body, the psyche, and the spirit. Integrates the development that I have gone through in my life up to this point, but also operates further development beyond the integration that I might experience at the present time. Now, if the body, the psyche, and the spirit are all working together, cooperation with one another, they are all at work to integrate the development of my life up to this point and to operate my further development. Now, most of the time they're not working together. To the extent that they are all working together from the same base towards the same goal, they are working to integrate my experience up to this point and to operate further, to move me beyond the point that I'm at the present time. And here's the point that I want to make out of this whole thing. The integration is for the sake of further development. It's for the sake of operating further development. Every integration gives way to further differentiation and new development. The integration is, in that sense, subordinate to further development. This is another way of putting the thing that I said earlier. The healing is for the sake of human creativity. Healing brings that sense of integration and wholeness. But that's for the sake of moving on, so that I can move on. So the integrator, the self as integrator, if you want, is subordinate to the self as operator. Or another way of putting the same thing, or perhaps introducing yet another dimension to it. I think it's true to say, the more I reflect on this, that the integration of my experience is something that I become aware of primarily at the level of the psyche. It's something that is felt. Integration, the integration or the disintegration, either one, but let's keep it in positive, hopeful context. The integration of my experience, where do I become aware of that in affectivity? I feel it. It's a psychic experience through and through. The operation of further development is a function not primarily of the psyche, but of conscious intentionality. Raising further questions, seeking further meaning, more inclusive truth, further decisions. That's how I move on, through the performance of those operations. So the integration is primarily a function of the psyche, or at least it's experienced primarily at the psychic level. The operation is a matter of the operations of conscious intentionality. Yes?
The operation involving the rational process, objective finding, immediate making this objective, you make possible new directions or opportunities.
Well, I would say that would be one way of making possible new directions and so on. But I don't think that ordinary person, not the one given to a lot of introspection, doesn't spend a lot of time objectifying his or her experience. And yet, the same thing can be going on there. Integration, operation. Okay? The integration is felt. The person might not be objectifying it all that much, except to say, I feel pretty good, but they might not go into much more detail on it than that. You know? And yet, the integration is enabling further development to take place. Now, where the further development takes place is as the person is confronted with new challenges, new experiences, new questions, and so on. And then those new questions give rise to, on the one hand, a feeling of a breakdown of this integration, or at least it's not enough. It's not enough to meet the new experience. It was enough up to this point, but it's not enough. And somehow it's being threatened. It's threatened by new challenges and new questions. And yet, if I'm going to move on, I've got to let the new challenges and the new questions threaten that integration. So that eventually, as I meet the new challenges and the new questions, a higher integration, more inclusive integration will come about. But what it is that moves to the higher integration is the new challenges that pose new questions. Does that make sense?
But now the new questions originated much internally.
Yes. Yeah. And where the challenges would come from, could be. They may even originate from the body. Sickness, for instance, or just growing older. They can originate from anywhere. See, the whole point, part of this is at least, when the new questions and the new challenges arise, to cling to the old integration leads to stagnation. The old integration was okay for the challenges up to that point. But to cling to it when there are new challenges that can't be met by that integration, it leads to stagnation and an unhealthy form of conservatism, if you want. John?
Cut me off. This is getting too far into the religion and culture course, but maybe it touches on what we've given review today. When you've got this impetus for integration, service of further operation, further a wholeness, but a service of creativity, if you've got almost a mandate or a culture which closes off and does not encourage creativity, it would seem like it throws you back with that, throws you back with the spinning at solely at the level of integration with no place to go with it, whether you call it therapeutic culture, culture of narcissism, or just staying at the level of a hothouse therapeutic atmosphere. And you can talk that in the first time I ever that was proposed to me, it was in terms of my false out of the seminary in St. Louis. Mm-hmm. We knew something was rotten, that we didn't know what it was. I think it wasn't totally corrupt, but there were those elements in those streams. I just wondered if that seems like that taking away the possibility for the creative moving with a further integration leads to not a healthy situation for people trying to live authentically.
Right. Yeah. I really thoroughly agree with that.
I really do. And I think, you know, if you've read Christopher Lash's The Culture of Narcissism, where he talks about, you know, not only does he say, I think he'll use other language for it, but it hits the same thing that you were saying, that we live in a culture that does not encourage, in fact, strongly discourages and even structurally impedes human creativity. And what we have done in response to that is to focus on the therapeutic. But in his book, he points out that even that is short-circuited. That a focus on the therapeutic that is not geared to the creative is, in fact, makes people sicker. It doesn't even allow therapy to take place.
Terry?
Put this all in context of adapting, change, occurring, and being able to adapt.
Yeah. And then that would be certainly one of the indications. I mean, a change in the social situation would be one of the areas out of which a challenge could come, you know, or a change in the body, or change in
and our
psyche.
Our direction is that always that we're always ready, able, or trying to be able to adapt to that change.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I don't think so. And see, this is not against, obviously, I'm not talking against integration, but I'm trying to put it into perspective within the totality of the development. Now, developmental psychology is the area of psychology that studies this whole process in detail, you know, at different ages and stages of life. So when Erickson runs you through the eight stages of ego development, for instance, the stages that he takes you through in his psychology, basically he's talking about ever higher integrations in personality. But in the process, the previous ones are broken down. As you meet the challenge of one part of life, for instance, in early childhood, the trust-mistrust challenge, am I going to trust or mistrust reality? All right. The child comes to a basic level of trust in reality, that reality is not totally hostile. Okay, that's an integration that is meant then to enable the next development that happens in the person's life. Identity, intimacy, generativity, and so on and so forth in the adult. With each one of those being gained, there's an integration that then enables the next stage to emerge.
And the past experience is also the brought forward to reintegrate into
life. That's right. Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, right. And the healing process, as a matter of fact, will reach ever further back into the past of the person.
That's when you would recognize something that you misunderstood so in the past.
Yeah.
And that's going along and causing you to...
Yeah.
fix it up.
Through the process of psychic healing, for instance, can ultimately reach back to or beyond a person's earliest memory. It's not going to start there, but it will go back there and incorporate more and more of the person's experience into a ground for further development. Okay. All right, so... Okay, B there on psychology of passional motivations. From the perspective that I'm trying to present, if we're going to place psychology on its proper foundations, I think that we have to make a distinction between what I've been calling psyche and what I've been calling intentionality. And I believe, I'm not going to go into it here, it's a metaphysical sort of thing. I believe that that distinction, I'm not talking about a separation, but a distinction. I believe that that distinction is rooted in an ontological distinction of matter and spirit. I believe... I hold with the Aristotelian Thomist tradition that there is an intrinsically spiritual dimension to the human person, which through the course of the tradition we have known as soul. And I'm holding that as the ontological basis for the distinction that I want to make in the experiential order between psyche and intentionality. Okay? Now, I'm not going to go into the metaphysics of that. I don't think, well, it's an extensive kind of thing, and I don't think that's important, but I want you to know where I'm coming from on this. In experience, we have the distinction between the sensitive flow of consciousness and the operations of intelligence, rationality, and decision-making. Now, if you grant me that distinction, that's sufficient for us to move on from here. Now, as I'm saying, this is not a separation, but a distinction that I want to make between two components of our experience. The sensitive flow of psychic consciousness and the operations of the human spirit that raise and answer questions for meaning, for truth, value. And that sensitive flow permeates the process of those operations, but it's not identical with those operations themselves. So, that's the first point then. To place psychology on proper foundations, we need to make at least that operative distinction between the psyche and human intentionality. If a psychology overlooks or explicitly rejects that distinction, it falls victim to a repression of the human spirit. A repression of our exigence, our demand for meaning, for truth, and for what is really good. And ultimately, I would like to be able articulately to defend the thesis that that repression is the primary repression that we are dealing with in our contemporary world, at least in the Western world, the first and second worlds. Primary repression that we're dealing with, God only knows we're not repressing sexuality anymore. The primary repression that we are dealing with is the repression of the human spirit and its demand for meaning, for truth, and for what is really good. And that's a repression that has been going on for centuries and is endemic to the Western way of life at the present time.
Could you expand just a little on how that repression sounds? And what are we told that does that repressing? Or
Well, for instance, in a psychology, you would be told, or it would be subtly communicated to you, that psychic wholeness was the goal of the therapeutic process. That feeling good is more important than being good. Or that what is interesting is more important than what is true. Those would be some indications of how it might come out in ideological expression. Does that answer your question?
I'll want more. I hope you have more examples as you go along.
All right, I'll try to. I'll keep that in mind as a question. All right, now I'll just finish this section and then we'll break. Eric Vogelin, keeping what I've just said in mind now, that about the repression of the human spirit if you don't make the distinction between psyche and intentionality. Vogelin, in his book, The New Science of Politics, states quite, I think, correctly, that most modern psychologies are psychologies of passional motivation. They are psychologies which downplay, either explicitly or implicitly, either willingly or unwillingly, however it may be, they downplay the demands of the human spirit for what is intelligible, true, and good. They understand our inner sensitive experience, our psychic experience, exclusively in such terms as stimulus response, associations, pleasure, pain, fulfillment of instinctual drive, self-fulfillment, wholeness, being turned on. That's getting into pop psychology at that point. These other ones are explicit psychological categories used in different psychological theories. Now, I'm not saying that a full understanding of our inner sensitive experience doesn't involve those elements. It does. But it involves much more than that, too, which I'll take up in the next section on the psychology of orientations. And to try to interpret our psychic experience exclusively in these categories, stimulus response, fulfillment of instinctual drives, pleasure, pain, and so on and so forth, to try to interpret our psychic experience exclusively in those terms is to leave out of account the demands of the human spirit. Now, this is not true of every contemporary psychology. Viktor Frankl's logotherapy, for instance, in no way leaves out these demands. In fact, it makes them central to the psychology that he's trying to develop. Man's search for meaning, from death camp to existentialism, the books that he's written. He makes the quest for meaning the core of the psychic understanding, the understanding of the psyche that he comes up with. But you do find this kind of thing, it's at the core of many of the articulations that we find in psychological therapy and psychological theory. The person is treated as a compound only of body and sensitive psyche. Vogelin makes the point. Now, he says there are some people who, for all practical purposes, are just compounds of body and psyche. But those people are, from a human perspective, sick. And to take them as a model for the development of your psychology is to make other people sicker. And not only is it a methodological blunder, but it is contributing to the disease of our time, which is the repression of the human spirit. And once again, something that I said, I think, in the first class. The sickness of people who, for all practical purposes, are just body and psyche. The sickness of those people is radically what Baldwin calls a pneumopathology, a sickness of the spirit, more radically than it is a psychopathology. More radically, it is a sickness of the human spirit. All right, let's quit at that point. We'll come back to the alternative notion of the psychology of orientations after we have a program.